Greetings to the broadest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Yesterday, we began to go through our Pope list here on Bob and Yurt Live and at kgov.com. And you'll be able to find this list at kgov.com/Pope. There were folks listening who were shocked by the account I gave of a Denver Roman Catholic priest who molested an altar boy, and we have a connection to the family of this boy who was molested at Denver Bible Church. I have met his sister, his surviving sister, and his cousin attends our church. We've gone down to the Denver Archdiocese to speak with them about this case. I described yesterday a bit of why that did not go well. So I'll give a few more details on that on today's program. And then if we have time also, we will look at the 2017 Life at Conception Act that has been sponsored by Rand Paul and a number of other senators. It's Senate Bill 231 this year. And it talks about the life of a human being beginning at the moment of fertilization, which is awesome. And there are no exceptions in the bill, which is awesome. There are two things in this bill that are discouraging, but I think that when someone supports this bill, that it's a good thing to do, but there are two things in the bill that are discouraging, and there's an aspect of this whole process where we'll talk this through, and we find that there are congressmen, senators, who will support a bill like this, but then never support or even oppose state personhood efforts. And why would that be? When a personhood bill says that a child's life begins at the moment of fertilization, just like this bill here. So it's basically, they're identical. But the reason it seems that so many congressmen for decades now have supported bills like this introduced in the U.S. House or Senate, whereas they don't follow through and support statewide efforts to say that the unborn child is a person from the moment of fertilization. Why would that be? And one plausible reason is because the statewide efforts have a chance of actually passing, of actually doing something, especially, for example, the personhood bill in Mississippi that came very close to passing. Here in Colorado, we've gotten to just over a third of the vote to say that the baby in the womb is a person from the moment of fertilization, from conception. So that's pretty cool. But we're moving to where people are recognizing that the baby in the womb is a person. But why would our U.S. senators and representatives, why would they support these bills introduced in the House or the Senate in Washington, D.C., but not be champions for the statewide personhood bills? Why would that be? And I suggest to you that these are mostly political pro forma checkmark to show that, hey, my pro-life bona fides, I support the Life at Conception Act that says the baby is a person from the moment of fertilization. So you can't get any more pro-life than that, except that we're still giving Planned Parenthood tens of millions of dollars every month. Still, right now, in March of 2017, we're halfway through the month of March, so we're going into 2 months of the Trump administration, and we're still giving Planned Parenthood tens of millions of dollars every month. Now, somebody might say, well, that's not the president's fault because that was last year's budget that Paul Ryan forced through. Remember Paul Ryan? He said last fall, Planned Parenthood should not get one red cent of tax dollars. Then he fully funded Barack Obama's budget for Planned Parenthood, fully funded it, and threatened any Republicans who didn't support and pass the budget, which they did. So now Donald Trump has seen fit to go after the excess spending for Air Force One, the wildly inflated cost for Air Force One, and also other government contracts that were negotiated in the past, including for fighter jets and so on, that are far in excess of what they should cost. So just because something was negotiated in the past doesn't mean that it can't be fought right now in the present. But still, Planned Parenthood is collecting their tens of millions of dollars, just like they did through all 8 years of the Bush administration. Now we'll find out, right? We'll see what happens a year from now. A year from now, will the funding for Planned Parenthood change? We'll find out. But at any rate, what happens by our U.S. representatives and senators is that they support these bills, they sponsor these bills, which they know are going nowhere. They don't fight for them to go anywhere. But then when it comes time for them to stand in a primary against an opponent who's a Republican pro-lifer who, let's say, really wants to fight to stop abortion, and that opponent says, you're not doing anything to stop abortion, and this Senator Rounds or Senator Crapo or Senator Scott or Senator Thune or Senator Inhofe or Senator Boozman, any of these, I know some of their names are weird, but anyway, any of these senators, they could say, what do you mean I'm not trying to stop abortion? I sponsored the Life at Conception Act. And everybody there at the political debate in the primaries, oh, wow, he did. He sponsored the Life at Conception Act, which the senators know will go nowhere. And there's no real effort. But when the state personhood battles come out and they're, and some of them are really a fight, like in North Dakota and like in Mississippi, even here in Colorado, where's the support? In fact, typically there's not only no support, but if these people are called to account, they will oppose the state personhood bills. So I'm speaking in generalities. So, okay, so back to our Pope list at kgov.com, which you could find on our website at kgov.com/pope. So yesterday, I think we talked about maybe two of the items on the list. And the first, this is Pope Francis. The first is the most horrific item on the list. I mean, the whole list is terrible. But the first is the assignment that he gave back a long time ago, 1964, before homosexuality was cool. This is when Roman Catholic seminaries were admitting, openly admitting homosexuals into their seminaries, as long as they would say that they're not going to act out on their lust, on their desires, perverse desires. It's like you don't have to act out on a desire for it to be a sin. Remember that Jesus said that when you have it in your heart, it's a sin. If the desire is wrong, then it's a sin when it's in your heart. James chapter 1 tells us the same thing. The Ten Commandments tell us the same thing, because it's if you covet that which you should not have. So let me give an analogy with child abuse. If a man desires a child sexually, that is a sin. It doesn't matter whether he acts out on it or not as to whether or not it's a sin. Of course, it matters tremendously to the child and to the child's family and to the whole world. It matters. But if a man has a desire for something that he cannot attain in any moral way, like if a man desires his neighbor's wife or some perverse men who are guilty of bestiality and they desire animals, so sick, and which is not especially uncommon in the origins of the modern homosexual movement, or if they desire another man. A man desires a man, or as Romans chapter 1 says in the New Testament, a woman desires a woman, or a man desires a man, and they burn in their lust one for another. That is the sin. That's the sin. Then you could go on to an additional sin of acting out on what is already a sin in your heart and in your mind. So if a man lusts after a woman, that is a sin. That is a sin. So, and Jesus taught this. So over the years, I've had so many Catholics and others, but especially Catholics, who are defending homosexuals in the priesthood, who say, well, it's not a sin if they don't act it out. And I think, have you ever heard of Jesus? Have you ever heard of him? Do you know who Jesus Christ is? Do you know what he taught in the Sermon on the Mount? Are you at all familiar with the Bible? Are you serious that if some guy lusts after children, he's not sinning if he doesn't act it out? Have you heard of the Ten Commandments? Do not covet your neighbor's wife. If you want her, you are sinning. And so the first assignment that Pope Francis gave, this is long before he was a pope. In fact, I think this was just as he's becoming a priest. He was given charge over a classroom of teenage boys in Argentina in 1964. So the first assignment he gave to these boys was to read the writing of an openly homosexual author. And that is absolutely despicable. We pointed out on yesterday's show, you know, they're in Argentina. So maybe Francis, he wasn't Francis back then. He was Bergoglio back then. But you think maybe he's going to assign them to read Don Quixote. You know, let's all tilt at windmills. Cervantes' Don Quixote. Or maybe El Cid. No, instead, he assigns them their, his first assignment is to read the writings of a Spanish author who is an openly homosexual author. And this author, undoubtedly in hell today, is Garcia Lorca. And we know this because one of Pope Francis' closest friends for all these decades, well, a friend who he cherishes the friendship to this day, he's visited him recently with his partner, this homosexual and his homosexual partner, was a boy in the class way back all those many years ago. So one of the boys in the class grew up to be a homosexual activist and one of the many homosexual defenders of Pope Francis. So then there's the question, did Pope Francis, was he responsible for homosexualizing this boy by an adult man in front of a class of teenage boys having them read homosexual material? So did the Pope homosexualize this boy and destroy this boy's life and his eternal soul? And are there others that this Pope homosexualized? And when he introduced the class of teenage boys to this openly homosexual author, how excited was he about this? I mean, it's your class, and it's the first assignment, and you want to make an impact on them. And so Francis, to this day, is far more supportive of homosexuals than he is of Christians who warn homosexuals about their sin. So, that's why I brought up the case of Father Neil Hewitt in Denver, in Colorado. It moved from Denver to Leadville, up in the mountains. But one of our church members at Denver Bible Church has a cousin, in fact, a brother and sister, her cousins, who they grew up together in the small town of Leadville, Colorado, up in the mountains. Leadville is like Denver's 5,000 feet, a mile high. Leadville's closer to, it's like 10,000 feet high. Real, I mean, it's a snowy place, a cold place. In the summer, it gets nice for about 3 weeks. But actually, it's a beautiful place to be. I was there two, three times this past summer going to climb one of their nearby 14ers, 14,000 foot mountains. But there was this priest, Neil Hewitt, a Denver Roman Catholic priest who was moved to Leadville. When he got to Leadville, Donna's cousin's father died young. So there's these two young kids, young teenagers, brother and sister, and their dad just died. So Neil Hewitt ministers to the family, tells the mother, I'm there for you, I'm there for your kids. And boy, was he there for the boy. In fact, he took the boy camping, he took the boy on trips, he took the boy, I think they even went to Canada on one trip, with other boys too. And he introduced Donna's cousin to alcohol. He became an alcoholic as a teenager. He introduced him to pornography. He brought pornography with them on their trips. These teenage boys, they were like, wow, here's this adult man allowing us to look at pornography, providing it for us. So he'd show them the pornography. He'd have them drink the alcohol, get drunk, and then he would take one of them into the bathroom of their hotel room and molest them. That's Donna's cousin. So Donna's cousin eventually, you could hear all this, not that you want to, but we've documented all this on our website, kgov.com. You could look at kgov.com/Neil Hewitt, right? You always put a hyphen between words on our website. kgov.com/Neil-Hewitt, H-E-W-I-T-T, Neil, N-E-I-L, Neil Hewitt. Or you could just go to kgov.com and search for Denver priest molested boy, and you'll find it. And so I read the handwritten letter that was left behind when this boy grew up to become a firefighter, a first responder, the kind of person we all tend to admire. He became a firefighter, but he could never overcome his alcoholism and his depression that he had from being a teenage boy. And he eventually killed himself. He shot himself in the head. And I read on the air the letter that he left behind, detailing how this priest, Neil Hewitt, molested him. So that's what led to us going to the Denver Archdiocese. They did nothing but stonewall. They said they were running ads asking family members and people who may have been molested by a priest to contact the Archdiocese. And as it turns out, we learned firsthand, those ads on radio in the Denver area, they had nothing to do with sorrow or contrition. They had everything to do with church lawyers and their risk management scheme. That was it. They wanted to figure out where was their vulnerability, could they be sued? And so they told Donna, we'd be happy to answer your question. We said when we went to the Archdiocese, we have one and only one question. And eventually there was email interaction between the Archbishop and himself. At this point, it was Denver Archbishop Chaput. And we said, we only have one question. Were there accusations against Neil Hewitt before he was moved to Leadville? That's the only question we want to know. Donna wanted to know as a cousin. They said, we would love to talk to you about that. We'd love to answer your questions, but we can only answer the questions of an immediate relative. You're a cousin. We would need parents, children, or siblings. So we contacted this victim's sister living in Utah. We bought her a ticket. She flew to Denver, and we went to the Archdiocese, and they completely stonewalled her. So they said we could talk to his sister. No talking to the sister. No. They said it's a personnel file. You can't share whether you sent a priest who, if he was a known predator or if there were known accusations against him that he was sexually molesting children, and you sent him to Leadville. You moved him to the Russian front. And you can't tell the family. All you need to say is there were no allegations against him. We had no idea. But if you did know, and you put a predator, you unleashed a predator on this parish up in the mountains, then that is atrocious. And if you did that, you are guilty, you being the archdiocese. And you need to confess. You need to show contrition. You need to show you're sorry. And that begins with acknowledging to the family if you had done that. And they would not answer the question. So I ended up interacting a bit with the Archbishop. Where is he now? He's in Philadelphia, isn't he? He got moved. But he tends to be more conservative, so the current Pope Francis doesn't like him. Because for the Pope, he's too conservative. And by the way, now this doesn't exactly belong in our Pope list, but I'll share it with you. At the time that I ended up interacting with the Archbishop, emailing back and forth. He wouldn't see us in person, but he responded to emails. One of my friends who is a Catholic, who had also then been interacting with him on email, and he would not answer these questions. Before he left Denver, I'm going to quote for you a line. In fact, it was almost his entire last email to my friend who's a member of the Denver Roman Catholic Church. This is what Archbishop Chaput said to my friend. He said, this ended their very contentious email dialogue that went on for some weeks. He said, I'll see you in hell. That was his last email to my friend. Is that bizarre? Is that absolutely bizarre that the Denver Archbishop would end a contentious disagreeing email with a member of his church, of his flock, saying, I'll see you in hell? Just unbelievable. I mean, he probably, I don't know, is that a confession or was he just angry? Maybe he knows. Maybe he knows where his heart is at. Maybe he knows. You know, you don't get to heaven by worshiping Mary, that's for sure. I mean, that doesn't do it. So at any rate, so if you go to our website, kgov.com, and you see our list, it's all organized. Beginning in 2002, I read the handwritten note left behind by how Father Neil Hewitt sexually molested this boy that he wrote then when he became an adult. And then we did a series of programs and updates, pedophiles, priests, and privacy. And then the sister wrote a letter to the archdiocese, and we quote from her letter. So it's all documented there in the stonewalling of the Denver Archdiocese. Now there's a new archbishop, but should we go again with the sister? Should we go again? I don't know the answer to that. So now back to our list, our Pope list at kgov.com. And whenever there's an accusation against a pope that the pope did or said something horrifically immoral, the conservative Catholics will say, oh, well, yes, that would be terrible, but it was a mistranslation. The pope didn't say that. You see, he was speaking in Polish, or he was speaking in Spanish, or he was speaking in Latin, or however he's speaking, and it was translated in English, and it was a mistranslation. Well, this list that we have here, our Pope list, none of that could be said about any of these. These are not mistranslations. And I also have noticed that over the last decades that we've been on the air, many conservative Catholics, they would be upset at the Vatican and acknowledge how immoral and left-wing and socialist and even pro-homosexual it's becoming. You know, like all the nuns who are lesbian, promotes lesbian and homosexuality and abortion, all that stuff, that kind of thing. And here, Regis College in Denver and so on. But they would criticize the Vatican while defending the Pope. I am noticing that increasingly conservative Catholics are now not only criticizing the Vatican, they're criticizing the Pope because they recognize this is disgusting for a man to assign to teenage boys to read this homosexual author. That is indefensible, and he has never, this is a public sin that he is guilty of, and to our knowledge, Francis has never repented from this very public sin. Then on the list, and this is just, what, less than 2 weeks ago, the Pope says there is no such thing as Islamic terrorism. And in the same talk, he said, but climate change is real. The threat to the world from climate change is real, but there's no such thing as Islamic terror. Since 9/11, we link to a list at our website, kgov.com/terror. We link to a list of every reported lethal terrorist attack by Muslims since 9/11. There are now over 30,000. It's about 30,200 lethal terrorist attacks. That's not a terrorist attack where people get maimed, where people get stabbed and they survive, where they get their legs blown off. That's not those. These are terrorist attacks by Muslims in the name of Allah where people have been killed. The latest attack, how many people were killed? 40 people 3 days ago. So for the Pope to say there's no such thing as Islamic terrorism, but global warming is real, that's not only delusional, it's sinful. Also on the list, the Pope being asked if he ever doubts God. If he ever doubts God. Of course, the Bible says whatever is not of faith is sin, the Apostle Paul wrote. But he speaks of, you know, yes, and when I do, I have these feelings of emptiness. But then he expressed this superiority as he judged other believers. And he said, those who don't occasionally doubt God remain infantile in their faith. Isn't that unbelievable? To grow in your faith, you have to doubt God now and then. How perverse that is. So I was asked by an agnostic, a well-known agnostic, Santi. I was asked, do you ever doubt God? And my reply led to a very important article on our website, important as judged by us. It's titled, On Doubt, What Does a Christian Doubt? It's at kgov.com/ondoubts. When asked about homosexual priest, Francis responded, who am I to judge? To which we answered, well, for starters, you're the Pope. How about that for starters? Homosexual priests? The Pope claimed that poverty is the center of the gospel, whereas, of course, Christ's cross and the forgiveness of sin are at the center of the gospel, not poverty. Jesus said you'll always have the poor, and that's because of drunkenness and laziness and bad religion and bad government. You'll always have the poor, but the poor, poverty is not the center of the gospel. That's a perversion. And the list goes on. There's a half a dozen other items on the list that you might want to check out. And next week we'll get to this Sanctity of Life Act, the 2017 Act. And we'll talk that through. Hey, may God bless you.